Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. How do you protect your energy from negativity when you're working in surroundings that are full of pain and suffering that you witness all the time? So there's two answers to this question. One is on the internal level of how we work with our energy, and then the other is on a very practical, literal level, and I'll give you both. So first of all, one of the things that we talk about in here a lot is that as energetic beings, there's two things we do. We receive and we transmit. Most things of energy tend to only do one or the other. So for example, this light is transmitting energy, but it's not receiving energy. If the bulbs went out, it means it's transmitting it to us. It's not receiving it from us. If the bulbs went out, we could all stand here all we wanted and give energy to the lamp, but it's not going to work. It needs a new light bulb. Or if it got disconnected from the electricity, we could stand here and we could, you know, give it all of our energy, but it still wouldn't make any light. Because it's not a receiver, it's a transmitter. When it's functional and the bulbs work and it's plugged into the wall, it transmits. Most of our devices transmit. We do both. We receive and we transmit. And the truth is, we're doing both all the time. But intention plays a very important role. There are certain times in which you really want to be focused on receiving energy. Times in which, because otherwise a lot of times our batteries they start to get empty. Our batteries start to die. It's like the mobile phone, your battery is dying. Suddenly you can't hear very well. This is happening, that's happening. You know, same way in our lives, if our batteries are depleted, our spiritual batteries, our energetic batteries, this is where you find that we lose our tempers, we get lost in impulse, we're not able to properly live in the truth of who we are. So we know that. We know that there are times that we feel spiritually energy depleted, times that we feel full. And so that power of intention is very, very strong. When you are someplace where you feel you are being filled, that your depleted energy is being filled, soak it up. intentionally, like really bring the intention to being an energetic receiver at that time. You're sitting in the aarti, Pooja Swamiji is singing. You are sitting in the lap or the arms of a loved one. You're watching a sunset over the banks of Ganga and listening, whatever it may be, just moments. Moments that are spiritually very deeply filling. Soak it up. You're energetically receiving anyway, but bring your intention to it. Bring that focus to it. Really, really picture yourself soaking up that energy. And then there are times in which you don't want to soak up the energy. You're sitting in a board meeting and people are screaming at each other. Maybe they're screaming at you. Maybe you are walking through a certain area in the night to get back to where you live, and it's an area that's kind of full of people who are drunk or on drugs or selling their bodies for sex or whatever it may be. But people whose energy is not something that you really want to take into yourself, can have compassion for them, but you don't want to take it in. So at those times, intentionally, you want to go within, say, all right, at this moment, I'm going to switch on my energy transmitting device. And again, at all times, we're transmitting, we're receiving. There's no one-way channel in our energy. But that power of our intention is very, very effective. And if you focus in certain times on transmitting instead of receiving, but don't focus on it in terms of changing them. So it's not about, I'm going to go into these situations that are negative and I, with my energy, am going to transform them. Because if that's the intention, the dilemma is what ends up happening is your focus is on changing others, which is rooted in this awareness of I think there is something wrong with others, which is rooted in an awareness of there is something wrong with the present moment. And what our spiritual practice is about, what our meditative practice is about, what getting grounded and anchored in that experience of an expanded awareness is, it's all perfect. Or even more deeply, it all just is. There's no adjective that works because it just is. You become in a state of just is-ness. And that is-ness is infinite and it feels perfect in you, but you can't label it because it's so labelless. And so if I walk into a situation with my mind saying, I'm going to fix this situation, A, that means there's a problem with the situation. B, it means I'm separate from the situation. I'm separate from others. I'm the one who's got to fix it. They're the one who's the problem. I'm the answer. So it creates separation. It also, by the way, gets very tired. It's one thing to do it in one situation. You're going in to visit a friend who's dying. The family is around suffering. You're going to be with them for a period of time. Yeah, by all means, think in your mind, how much love can I bring to this moment? But if you're talking about every day, all day, if your mind is on, I'm going to fix all of these people, A, you feel separate from them. B, you feel very frustrated. And C, you get very tired energetically. So when we talk about energetic transmission, it's not transmission with the intention of I'm fixing others. It's transmission simply with the intention of I am creating my own psychic field here. I have to move through my own energetic field that I know does not end with my physical body. I know that I'm picking up the energy in the universe. Therefore, I'm going to transmit into that energy. The example that I love about this, that for me makes it very vivid, is the example of the wetsuit. Okay? Now, has anybody here ever worn a wetsuit? Raise your hand if you've ever actually worn a wetsuit. Oh, good, a whole bunch of you. Great. So here's what's interesting. It's called a wetsuit because you actually are wet. A lot of us think, well, you wear a wetsuit, it keeps you dry. It doesn't. Here's how a wetsuit works. It's brilliant science. It allows in a tiny amount of water, just a tiny, tiny amount of water, that your body heat automatically warms up. And then it keeps that tiny amount of water in the suit. So you could be in the ocean, which is freezing, but you are in an environment of warm water. Okay? Now hold that metaphor in your mind, because that's what I'm talking about in terms of energetic transmission. You are transmitting into the world around you because that's the world you need to move through. It's like a very good friend of mine from California used to come to India when her daughters were very young. They're now graduated from graduate school. But in any case, her youngest daughter was very, very sensitive to sights and smells and everything. And when they would walk through the marketplace that was just full of so many smells, her young daughter was just overwhelmed. And so one day they bought her this beautiful aromatherapy bottle. And she would walk through the marketplace just spritzing her aromatherapy. Now, she knew it wasn't changing how it smelled coming out of that restaurant. It wasn't changing how it smelled of the, you know, poop on the road over there. But it was changing her own little environment that she had to walk through the marketplace in, that made it a much more pleasant aroma therapeutic experience. So in the same way, transmit into an energetic world that you want to move through. Let that be your intention. Now, the beautiful aspect is it is going to change the world around you. That's a very beautiful byproduct. But if you go into it thinking that that's what you're going to do, you become too much of the doer. And being the doer, being the actor, being the one who's making things happen, keeps us separate from actually the grace that is doing. It keeps us separate from the world in which we are doing. And it keeps us separate from the truth, which is we're not the doers, we're just the instruments. And so focus on transmitting energy in those moments. It will impact the world around you. That's what our world needs today. That's actually all our world needs today, is people to be connected to their own ability to actually transmit love, compassion, truth, connection to God. If we actually all moved through the world transmitting that, and those who didn't have any turned on their energetic receivers, we would live in a completely different world. So transmit, so that you are not receiving the negativity. So that, like wearing the wetsuit in the ocean, you've warmed up the water around you, and that's the experience that you're moving through the world with. And more beautifully than the wetsuit, as I said, you do actually end up giving that energy to the world. You don't end up giving warm water to the ocean. But you do end up giving energy to the world. But especially you prevent yourself from absorbing the negative energy of the people around. On a very, very, very specific but very practical and helpful level, those who do energy work, those who are really surrounded day in and day out by a lot of negativity in which we are giving of ourselves a lot. Nature, plants, dirt, leaves, water. As much as you can, ground your energy. It works beautifully. It was actually a technique taught to me by a very, very powerful energy healer many, many, many years ago when I was starting to do this work. And he said, leaves, water, dirt. And it's very easy because pretty much wherever you are, you can have a potted plant near you. You can find a potted plant, you can walk outside to where there's, just touch the leaves, get your hands in the dirt. At the bare minimum, there's always going to be a bathroom with a sink. Run your hands in running water. That regrounding, literally, is a huge energetic impact. When you take literal electricity that isn't grounded, you get shocks. When I first moved to India, very few places actually had grounding. And I would touch my laptop and it would, you know, you'd get all kinds of current would come through it. You'd touch certain parts of it, it would actually, you know, do this to you. Still sometimes it happens. Because that grounding isn't always yet 100% full, 100% perfect, 100% complete. So literally the ground grounds electricity. And so when you're working with your own energy, it's a very, very, very powerful technique. So if your workplace situation does not enable you to be, for example, barefoot, and near leaves and dirt, at least at the end of every day, as much as you can, on your lunch hour, go out, even if it's literally just like the little potted dirt area with the trees in the parking lot, even places that are cemented over, even just for decoration, tend to have areas of dirt and plants. Just get your shoes off. Put your feet in there. Touch the leaves. Touch the plant. Hold the dirt. If you don't want to take your shoes off, okay, hold it with your hands. But it's a very, very, very powerful, immediate way to just ground your own energy and to remove that negative energy from you.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's R-A-I-N-N dot O-R-G.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. As you say, you grew up in a situation without, and so there's that scarcity, lacking mentality. Interestingly, it's actually a mentality that an overwhelming percentage of people have. Now, we don't all have it about money. People who grew up without money have it about that. The rug's going to get pulled out from under me. Oh my God, what am I going to eat? Where's the roof going to come from? But interestingly, even those who grew up with plenty of money and may not have that sense of not enoughness about money, almost all of us, it's almost this tragic epidemic, nonetheless move through the world in this scarcity mentality. And whether it's not enough time, there's too much to do, I don't have enough time, hence I am stressed. Whether it's not enough success, not enough love. It's a very interesting thing. Think for a moment and be really honest with yourself. Think for a moment about when someone you know has something really good happen to them. They get a raise at work. They get a fantastic new job. They get married. They win the lottery. They go on a beautiful vacation to Tahiti. They have a beautiful baby. Think about inside what your feeling is about that. Now, as spiritual people, we would love to say, oh, I am so happy for them. I share their joy. I am ecstatic that they got this great job. I'm ecstatic that they got a wonderful marriage. I'm ecstatic that they have beautiful children. I'm ecstatic that they got a holiday. But the truth is, for most people, there's more than a small amount. Many people, it's quite a large amount. Of this internal sense of, ugh. And we hate to admit it. And that's okay, you don't have to admit it publicly. I'm not going to make you do a show of hands. But it's important at least to admit it to ourselves. And the reverse also works. When something bad happens to someone, they were about to get married, but it fell through. They lost their job. They were going to go on this fabulous vacation and then they, you know, broke their leg and couldn't go. There's something in us that almost goes, huh. And you think, God, we are horrible people. Because on a logistic level, it makes no sense. It's not that they got married and you wanted that guy or you wanted that woman, so it was the one person they married. It's not somebody in your job that the job they got was what you wanted. This is true even when they work in a totally different company, married somebody totally different. It's not that they're giving birth to the child who should have been in your womb. Nonetheless, there's this incredible myth that somehow there's this like cosmic pie of happiness. And every slice you get is one fewer slice for me to have. And so all the people who are finding happiness, that pie is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and I'm panicking more and more and more. There's all kinds of great research that comes out of social media these days that actually talks about how much depression is caused by social media. Why? Because you scroll your Facebook feed and everyone is so happy. Everything is going right for everyone. Everyone is on vacation. Everyone is at the park with their kids. Everyone is lying in bed with their loved one taking selfies on a Sunday morning. And there's this sense within people of, as you scroll, of, oh my God, that pie is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. My piece is shrinking. So this concept of lack is actually much more pervasive. It would be wonderful if only people who grew up without ended up having this sanskara of lack. But I barely know people. I mean, a tiny, tiny handful of people, and it's only people who have done lots of spiritual work, who don't move through the world like that. Because on some level, that sense, we've gotten it. We've gotten it from our parents. They haven't necessarily had to say it to us, but we've picked it up. Our culture gives it to us. Our advertising gives it to us. Marketing gives it to us. It's how commercials work. You are supposed to wish you were the person in that picture. That's why you'll buy the product. You're supposed to wish your life were as good as the people driving that car so that you'll go out and buy the car. The only way out is to recognize a sense of abundance that has nothing to do with anything in the outside world. Because sure, you can give yourselves all the affirmations that you want about, I'm going to make $1 million this year. Maybe you will, God bless you. But maybe you won't. And if you don't, it's not because your meditation isn't good. It's not because you're not doing the right practice. There's laws of the universe. There's so many laws of karma that our particular karmic path is interwoven with that also impact us, not just what I've decided I'm going to do. So the concept of an experience of abundance is not the affirmation of, this year I will become a billionaire. But it's in this moment, there is more than enough. In this moment, right here, right now, my cup runneth over. And that experience carries you into the next moment, into the next moment. Because if your cup runneth over in this moment, it's going to runneth over in your next moment. And it's going to runneth over in the moment after that. Because that's what we carry with us into the world, is the experience of, my cup runneth over. And doesn't mean you're going to make $1 million or $1 billion or even $100,000. It doesn't mean you're going to make any money. But what it means is that the sense of not won't be there. There's a sense of the universe will take care of you. I know actually several people who, for different spiritual practices, people of different traditions, different religions, so many different paths of life, have embarked on some kind of a journey with no money. Journey by foot. Journey across America. Journey from India to Paris, journey across India. I mean, I know different people who have done different things. Carrying no money. For the spiritual teaching of letting go of fear. For the spiritual teaching of knowing the universe will support you. None of them has become a homeless beggar on the street. None of them decided this was the way they wanted to live the rest of their lives, you know, taking from others. Each of them now is actually very successful in different ways. But simply to give themselves that teaching of, I'm being taken care of by the universe. There's a beautiful parable of the man who was holding on to a rope for dear life. And an angel came and said to him, let go. He said, I can't let go. What are you, crazy? If I let go, I'm going to plummet to my death. She says, well, okay, then just let go with one finger. So her voice is very sweet and soothing. And he says, okay, I can let go with one finger. A little while later, she says, let go with another finger. And slowly, slowly, this angel coaxes him to let go with one finger after another. Till finally, he's holding this rope only with one finger. And her voice still says, let go with that finger. Now he says, now you've gone too far. Now I've only got one finger. If you make me let go with that, I will definitely plummet to my death. Somehow, I don't even know how I'm holding on with one finger. But I've got to keep holding on. But her voice is just so divine and says, let go. So he does. And miraculously, he doesn't fall at all. And he looks down and he realizes he's actually been standing on solid earth the whole time. And I love that story. Because whether we are afraid of not having enough money, not having enough success, not having enough love, not getting enough done, whatever it may be, we're holding on to life with this death grip. If I let go, I will fall. I will be homeless and starving. I will be a horrible failure. I will be all alone. I will plummet into this. And so we hold on with this death grip. When actually Mother Earth is supporting us the whole time. But we're not able to realize that. We're also not able to live our lives because we're holding on with this death grip to the rope. Now, it's important to realize that doesn't mean we become lazy. We actually become the opposite of lazy because fear paralyzes us. Fear is what keeps us from moving. Having courage, being able to let go of that rope and now have my hands, knowing I'm on solid ground. Well, whereas before I couldn't do anything, now I can skip and run and jump because I know, yeah, Mother Earth has got my back. So interestingly, that courage actually makes us even more active, engaged, effective. Creators of our own destiny. Creators of divinity on earth. Because I know I'm being cared for. Think about when you learned how to ride a bike. So if you first had a bike with no training wheels and nobody holding the backside, right? Think about riding that for the first time. You're really scared. You're really tense. You're really contracted. You don't breathe very well. But on the other hand, if your dad's got you from behind, you know dad's not going to let go. Or you get a pair of training wheels on the bike. Well, then you're all set. Then you're ready to ride it through the neighborhood. So in the same way, when we realize, oh, wait, I'm being cared for by the universe, that same wisdom that is caring for all of nature. It's caring for me. My favorite story on this, and we'll conclude with this evening, is the story of the king. It's a good king. Housed the homeless, fed the hungry, built schools and hospitals and all sorts of things in his kingdom. And one day this holy man walks through the kingdom, and the king was also a very arrogant man. Good guy, but a bit full of himself. It happens, sadly, even to those who do good work. And he walks the holy man through the kingdom, showing, look where I've built houses for the homeless, and look where I'm feeding the poor, and look at the hospitals I've built for the sick. And so the holy man just keeps listening, and as they walk, they pass a stream. The holy man bends down, and he picks up a rock out of the stream, and he says to the king, tell your soldiers to break this rock. So the king's like, what? But when a holy man tells you to do something, you do it. And so he tells his soldiers, break the rock. They do. And inside the rock is this beautiful, nutrient-rich pool of water in the rock. And in that pool of water is this tiny little frog living very happily in the pool of water in the rock. And the holy man holds it out to the king and he says, and did you do this for the frog also? And I love that story because, A, it's a great story about thinking that we are the doers. But it's also a great story when we forget that there's a cosmic doer, a cosmic caretaker, a cosmic provider, that teaches squirrels how to store nuts for the winter, that teaches bears how to hibernate, that teaches caterpillars how to become butterflies, that takes care of nature for it to not only survive but thrive, that makes trees lose their leaves so that those leaves packed under snow can become great fertile soil, because we know we need more growth in springtime. That wisdom, that caregiver, hasn't forgotten us. Certainly knows what you need, which isn't, by the way, the mansion or the Mercedes or the job that you may have thought you needed in order to be happy. So it's never a guarantee of thou shalt get this or that. But it's simply a guarantee of thou shalt know, regardless of what you have, that your cup runneth over. Because that's what real abundance is. That's what real prosperity is. It's not about how much I have. It's about how I feel about what I have. And that's what our spiritual practice gives us. And so allow yourself to experience every day abundance. Give yourself a sadhana that every day you have to give something away. Give something away every day. It doesn't have to be something tangible. Maybe it's some amount of your time. Maybe you save some food off your plate to feed to the birds. Whatever it may be. But just develop a practice every day. Something that was yours, that you thought you needed. So it's not fair to like take extra on your plate because you know, well, I've got to save something to give the birds. Give away something that you thought you needed. Whether it's time, whether it's something tangible, whatever it may be. But just develop that practice so that you can realize, wow, every day I'm giving something. And yet every day, my cup continue to runneth over. I'm not diminished by what I'm giving. And actually what you'll find is you're even fuller by what you give. And it'll create a whole new sanskara of fullness based on what you give rather than what you have.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. Fortunately, this is one area where simply understanding it in the mind is almost enough. There's a lot of areas where it's not enough. But this is actually one area where a real deep, full understanding in the mind is almost all you need. Because when I really understand how absolutely silly I'm being, how absolutely voluntarily I've taken my freedom and given it to someone, we start to take it back. It's the first and most important step, and it actually gets you almost all of the way there. There's some moments in our life in which simply the presence of truth is enough. I remember when I was back in America for the few months in between being in India and then moving to India, and Pooja Swamiji had sent me back to finish the next semester, and everybody I knew told me I was completely crazy to come back and didn't make sense, and I should, you know, finish the degree and get myself settled and do all of that, and then if I wanted to, you know, take a year or two off for a spiritual quest, I could do that. You know, people go to the Peace Corps, they do all sorts of things, no problem, but first get yourself settled. And I spent many weeks in this inner deep anxiety of one voice in my head saying, I know I'm supposed to be back in India. I know I'm supposed to be back in India. And this other voice in my head that was deeply indoctrinated by the world that I lived in, that had, a world I had spent 25 years in, a world that was my world, that I had always believed everything it told me. I wasn't a rebel of that world that was used to not doing what anybody said. And I went and I was talking with a very, very dear friend of mine, a mentor. And I was telling her about this. And she looked at me and she said, when I look at you, I see a woman who is already back in India. She said, that decision, it seems to me, has already been made. And as far as I can tell, the only real decision you have to make now is whether you're going to spend the next 6 weeks, because that was what was left of my semester, the next 6 weeks driving yourself crazy, convincing yourself you're making a decision that you've already made. Or you can spend the next 6 weeks packing and figuring out how to move back to India. And I share this story with you because in that moment when she said that, simply the speaking of the truth dissipated 100% of the anxiety. Not 10%, not 20%, not, oh yeah, yeah, you're right, but oh my God, now what do I do? There are moments in our life in which the presence of the truth is enough to dissipate all of the untruth. And this particular situation of the hurt that we hold on to actually can be one of those situations. The minute that I really have that awareness, like the truth literally starts to feel like a presence in the room. I mean, there had been two of us, and then it literally felt like there were three of us, that it was her and me and truth that suddenly now existed in the room. And when you really have that awareness of, oh, wait, what am I doing? Yeah. If you allow yourself to breathe, a lot of times in that moment, you can actually breathe it out. When you realize that you're hanging on to something, that isn't of the present moment. The being who was hurt isn't in the room now. On a very physical, literal level. Every cell of your being, if it happened more than several years ago, every cell of your being has changed. Skin cells have changed, your organs have regenerated, your blood has regenerated. Like there's not a cell in you today that was hurt if it happened more than several years ago. And if it happened less long ago than several years, the cells that are in you are cells like the ones of your liver or your kidneys. But they're not the ones holding on to the pain. It's the mind. It's the brain that isn't letting go. And so the minute that we realize that actually the pain that I'm experiencing is my choice. I've brought it into this moment. And I have a choice to hold on to it or to let it go. So here's a good way to think about it. It's my favorite example on the subject. Imagine, and it's a light example, but imagine that here I've got this beautiful little couch thingy that they've made me. And you don't have to imagine it, you can see it. And it's a beautiful cream colored. Now imagine that at some time other than satsang, I was sitting with someone and I invited them to come in to sit next to me here. And then I said, hold on a moment. You look like you need a cup of tea. And I personally go in the kitchen and I cook them up a cup of tea or coffee with all the love in my heart. And I bring it back and I sit next to them here. And they then take that cup of tea or coffee and they spill it on my couch. Knowingly or unknowingly, on purpose or not on purpose, it doesn't matter. Either way, they spill it on my couch. And then they have the audacity to stand up and walk out. What would you advise me to do in that moment? Clean it up. Anybody gonna run after them? Get back here! Clean up that mess. Because I know I've got to sit here every night. This is my couch. Coffee stains, tea stains. I'll deal with them later, but at the moment, I've got to get this stain out of my couch. Now, here's what's interesting. There's no one who would advise me or who in their own lives would say, yeah, yeah, I know, keep the stain. So that next time when they come back, you can show them, look what you did. Look what you did. Look what a mess you made of my couch. Or so that I could say to other people, you know that guy? Can you believe it? I made him a cup of tea and look, look at the stain on my couch. You see it right there? He did that. And I had just made him a cup of tea with my own hands. Sadly, we understand intuitively the value of our beautiful couches much more than we understand the value of our hearts. Because when someone hurts you, what we do is we hold on to it, like the stain, sort of expecting that they're going to come back and clean it up. And in the meantime, it festers, and it smells, and ants come. And I sit here every night and I get sick, because all kinds of bacteria growing in it. But I'm waiting that that guy's going to come back and clean up the mess he made, because it's his fault. And I had been so nice. And that's what we do with our hearts. We hold it and just let it fester. Because on some level, we're waiting. We're waiting that that person is going to fix it. And this is the dilemma. They may. People change. People repent. People apologize. It happens. But it doesn't happen nearly enough. And it certainly doesn't happen all the time. And it certainly doesn't happen quickly. And I could always get another couch if I made the wrong decision and decided that he was worth waiting for to come back and clean it up and he didn't show up. But I can't get another heart. And it's not a gamble worth taking. If they come back and they're changed and they repent, wonderful. You've got a beautiful couch upon which to offer them a seat. You may want to wait a while before making them a cup of tea. You may want to try it out for a little while first. But great, you now can have another relationship. But if they don't come back, if they don't repent, at least you don't make yourself sick by sitting on this bacteria-infested, ant-infested, smelly couch every night. And your heart, it's not just every night, it's all the time. So that awareness of, oh, wait. That, if you really take it deeply, should be enough to let you let it go. And you're here on the banks of Ganga in a sacred place with a sacred river who takes pain. She took mine. I've watched her take so many people's. Sit in the yajna fire every night. Anybody having trouble letting things go, sit in that yajna every night and offer the seeds and offer the seeds and offer them. And offer them until it's just seeds. Keep offering all of the pain in you, everything in you. The pain, the grudges, the anger, all of that. Just keep offering, keep offering, keep offering until there's nothing left to offer and you've just got a handful of seeds. Stand in Ganga, offer to her waters. She'll take it. you're worth it. Because, of course, that's the core. Do I deserve my freedom? And you do. Whatever someone else may have said or done, you deserve your freedom. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.